Our program, My Better Half, explores aspects of thriving later in life. Today, host Vanessa Finney speaks with Lynn Slater, a fashion influencer who signed her first modeling contract when she was in her 60s. Recently, she's written a book, How to Be Old, Lessons in Living Boldly from the Accidental Icon.
Welcome to My Better Half on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Vanessa Finney. What happens when you're pressured to represent an entire demographic when you're just trying to be yourself? That happened to my guest, Lynn Slater. She broke out of one box, academia, only to be put in another box, senior influencer, until she left it all behind and took back control of her own story.
I ended up sort of losing myself and finding myself and have landed here at the age of 70, publishing my first non-academic book and actually not being a style influencer, just living a very lovely life with my grandchildren and my local community and my partner and my garden. Yeah, sort of coming full circle.
Lynn's new book is called How to Be Old, Lessons in Living Boldly from the Accidental Icon. It traces several reinventions. After being a social worker for decades, she earned her PhD in her 50s and was a professor of social work for 20 years. Meanwhile, she'd always loved clothes, so when she wanted a new creative challenge at the age of 60, she enrolled in classes at the Fashion Institute of Technology, started a fashion blog, and launched on Instagram with the handle Accidental Icon. It turned out that the world was hungry to see stylish older women. She was signed by a modeling agency, featured in ad campaigns, and flown around the world. It was a glamorous, unexpected chapter, spanning several years, until she realized the media was using her to tell a story that she never intended to tell. Lynn, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So your story is one of a long career, first of all, in social work and academics, until it took a surprising turn relatively late in life. So since you spent the bulk of your professional life teaching, and your new book is a literal how-to, so I was wondering if that's still a meaningful thing to you, sort of learning something, then wanting to impart that knowledge to others.
Yeah, I think a big part of me is an educator. You know, teaching was something that I really enjoyed. It's sort of the one thing that I do miss. I think it's more just a impulse to share my experience and my ideas with others and to sort of see what then comes back and then have a conversation. And for me, that was the most exciting part of doing the Accidental Icon, because I was meeting all of these people who were quite different than my colleagues and people who were in my profession, people who were makeup artists and creative directors and stylists. And I was having these really interesting conversations about how they saw the world, and they would ask me how I saw the world, and it really was sort of a co-creation or a collaboration, and that is one of the things that I really love. And even as a professor, I did not stand in the front of the room and impart my knowledge to students. I really facilitated a collaborative learning experience where often I was learning from them as much as they were learning from me. And that is also how I also worked with all of my clients in my career as a social worker. It was never about me imparting something. And that was one of the things that sort of became concerning to me over time. As society began to take what I was doing with Accidental Icon and sort of making it be, this is the way that you should all be when you're having an older life. You should be like her, without really naming sort of the privilege that had allowed me to do that. And so I never set out to be a marker or to teach people about how to be old. And even in the book, while the title is How to Be Old, it's really more a story of how I was being old and some of the lessons that I learned about it along the way. And again, in the hopes that when somebody reads my book, they might see something that I did or that I learned that they could apply to their own life.
And we'll start getting into some of those lessons in just a moment. If you're just tuning in, I'm Vanessa Finney, host of My Better Half on Jefferson Public Radio. My guest today is Lynn Slater, a former fashion icon who decided to step back from that role. Lynn is the author of the new book, How to Be Old, Lessons in Living Boldly from the Accidental Icon. And by the way, it might be a good time to give listeners where they can find you. Is it lynnslater.substack.com?
That's absolutely one, and that's probably where I'm going to be spending a lot of my time after sort of the book is out in the world. And that's where I do my writing now. So that's, you can find me there. My Instagram is at Icon Accidental. And those are probably the two places where I can be found.
Okay, great. And we should add that Lynn is spelled L-Y-N. So you're at lynnslater.substack.com. So let's get into some of the lessons from your book. First of all, just the subtitle. What does living boldly mean to you?
I think living boldly means when you are living a life that is formed and informed and comes from a place of your own values. And I think that part of my story is, as time went on and kind of the story or about me, about what I was trying to do, was sort of taken out of my hands, that I sort of lost myself in this kind of digital world of Instagram and really kind of got away from who I was authentically, which had ironically been what attracted a lot of people to me initially. And so the second part of the book is me really stopping and taking a look at what had happened to me and really reconnecting again with my values and the things that are important to me. And when I am fully in myself that way, then I always have a lot of energy and a lot of purpose, and I'm very clear, and so that's how I think about sort of boldness.
Okay. That makes me think of your latest blog post on Substack. It's called You Can't Always Tell What a Story's About from Its Title, where you're talking about having authorial control of one's own narrative. That's something that you were just talking about, where people started trying to influence who you should present yourself as, and you sort of had to come back to authenticity. Can you explain a little bit about that, about having authorial control?
Well, I think initially I really did. I was very much just being a woman who was doing something creative and exploring something new, which had nothing to do with my age. Women do that at all different points in their lives. And when that story got taken away and out of my hands was when the media made this a story about my age. Mm. Because I had never intended this to be about age. I don't think that getting dressed has anything to do, you know, with how old you are. I think it's a very personal and individual action. And so when for a while, I kind of got away with it in the beginning of just being this interesting woman doing this interesting thing. And then the media started to put age into the picture. And so it was, oh, look at this woman who is so good at styling and fashion, and oh, she's 63. And basically, I was just putting clothes on, you know. And then it was, oh, look at this woman. She knows how to do social media. You know, she's 65. And they made it be about age when it really was this impulse that I think so many of us have to explore our passions and to be a creative person in the world. And so once that began to happen, I started to lose control of, you know, how people would see me and what people would think about me. And not that you have control over that in your own life, but you're able to address it when it happens in real life. And so I think it became very frustrating over time that I was becoming this poster child for how to age in a great way when there are many people who, you know, many women who did not have access to the things that I had, or the fact that we all have very individual stories about aging. And at some point in time, I got confronted about that by some women who were quite angry with a comment I had made when I was in the midst of all of this, you know, whirlwind, when I said age is just an illusion in a very dismissive way. And a woman basically started to say, look, I have to work till I'm 80. I'm taking care of my sick husband. I worry about, can we stay in this place that we're living at? And I have health issues myself. And all of this is 10 times worse because of age discrimination. And I'm telling you, sweetie, it's not an illusion. And that really hit me. Mm. And that was the moment when I realized that, you know, this isn't my own little fun project anymore, that I've been positioned into a place where I have the power, you know, to either sort of encourage people, which I did, you know, influence them in a good way to maybe take risks or see aging differently. Mm-hmm. But I was also impacting women negatively who sort of felt that they were less than when they looked at me and what I was wearing and, you know, what my body looked like, or women who felt like I could never be where she is. And so I had always had to deal with that, you know, as a social worker, because you always have to hold in your hand the power that you could either hurt or help. And so I got in touch with that. I didn't expect to find that dynamic in this world, which was about fashion and, you know.
Right. Sort of the power of privilege or having a platform.
Exactly. And that's when I began to start thinking about that I can't continue to do it in the way I was doing it. And, you know, I had to start thinking about getting out, because even the term Instagrammer, it's actually very ageist. It's not only ageist, but it's sexist, because it's making an assumption that all women who are on social media, all older women on social media, are grandmothers. Right? So it's, you know, in the very same sentence, the media has been using that term to describe me and other older people on social media, calling us senior influencers, Instagrammas, which are very ageist comments, in the same breath that they're saying we're breaking stereotypes. They're referring to us in stereotypes. And that really made me mad.
How ironic. And I noticed your title in itself, How to Be Old. It's not how to stay young. It's right. How to make sure you fulfill your greatest creative potential at the time of life that you're at.
Yes.
I wanted to get back to the book. Your first chapter is called Predict the Future by Inventing It. And you described how when you started attending classes at the Fashion Institute, you wanted to know you still had value, that you still had the power of reinvention and self-invention. And just to give a taste of your writing and how you accomplished your own version of that, I'm just going to read a little excerpt from that first chapter. You say, I was searching for an understanding of how I would live my life as an older person, what possible identities I could assume, what potential existed in me, despite the anxiety of not knowing about this new time of life. And yet this was not the first nor the last occasion that I took time to consider what kind of life I wanted to live and identify who I might become. I expressed this quest during other times of my life through the clothes I wore and my propensity for constantly reinventing. Taking control of how you want to live your life and what story you want to tell about yourself is an act that transcends age. As each year passes during our lifetimes through experiments and trial and error, we're always figuring out how to respond to what life throws our way. If we change how we think, are willing to risk a little and experiment and view challenges as creative opportunities, suddenly anything is possible. Life when you are old could very well become an unpredictable, wild, and crazy adventure, as it has for me. Mm. So I just find that really intriguing, and it makes me look forward to the rest of my life, and I hope some of our listeners share that. And one of your phases, you in your late 40s and early 50s, you began working on a PhD, and that was a form of reinvention itself when you trained to become a professor. When your fashion career started taking off, you delved into a whole new field. You had always loved fashion and the aesthetic of that, but you really took a deep dive into fashion theory. What was that like, learning about something so deeply and learning from the people in that industry that you might not have appreciated their roles in prior?
Well, I think fashion is sort of looked at as this very innocuous, frivolous thing. And, you know, I think more and more we're learning much more about the underside of fashion, underneath the prettiness of the clothes, that, you know, there are garment workers that are not being paid enough or are in unsafe working conditions, that fashion brands are the biggest polluters, and that as consumers, we ourselves are contributing to these mountains and mountains of landfills of clothes. And I think I was starting to see the underside of all of the glamour and sort of the superficial part of fashion. And I was also at the same time as seeing sort of the enormous power that fashion has, I was also seeing designers, meeting young designers and creative people who had a lot of dreams about being creative and sort of seeing their work out in the world and being confronted with sort of, whoa, wait a minute, this is not just art, this is business. And I think I was having like a parallel process, because originally for me, it had really been a form of art. I always thought of clothing as sort of materials that I was working with to create a self, to express myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why people thought my style was unique, because I never did trends. I never, you know, dressed for fashion. I dressed for identity. And so I think as I was getting deeper and deeper into it, I was having that same dissonance that these younger designers were having, when all of a sudden you see how much of this is about, you know, business and the market and consumerism and sort of how, when you are entering into it from a position of creativity and sort of artistic expression. So it was very interesting for me to be finding out all of these different things as I was digging underneath what was visible.
One of the reasons I've been looking forward to talking to you about your experience is that on the one hand, you showed this great long-term commitment to your field of social work in a couple of ways. So there's that steadiness. Yet on the other hand, you showed yourself to be really deft in navigating this accidental life change, accidental in the sense that it took off to the degree that it did. And that brings us to the second chapter of your book, Take Advantage of Lucky Accidents. I wonder if you can talk about how you sort of amplified those accidents and how we might all keep our eyes open for those fortuitous moments.
Well, I think, you know, and this is sort of, there's a lot of talk and it has almost become a buzzword of about reinventing and reinventing yourself, particularly in older life. And I think that my experience has been that whenever I have sort of been too goal-oriented or fixed on outcomes, that it puts a kind of blinder on you. And you miss a lot of things that are accidental or sort of are opportunities, but you don't see them because you're so laser focused.
Right.
And whenever I would go out and I would sort of do these creative explorations, I would not have goals and intentions, and I would just put myself in. And so things would just happen that I didn't plan for, that I didn't anticipate. They were sort of very accidental kinds of things that if I had known when I entered the space, oh, I can be a fashion influencer and I can make a huge amount of money doing this. And then I started to try to systematically do it, I would probably have failed miserably. I think I didn't have an intention, and so I put myself in, and I was seeing things that even the very very idea that I became famous was accidental, because it was the furthest thing from my mind when I started the project. So my advice to people who feel a need to reinvent is to, you know, just find something that you're really interested in, that you want to find out about, that might be a passion of yours that you never had an opportunity to explore, and then put yourself in a space or an experience or an institution where you can explore it and don't have an idea in your head what's going to come at the end. And so that's how I have approached things. And in that process, you sort of I call them lucky accidents. I can see them and I can take advantage of them.
And you mentioned that somewhere as something I believe that you learned during your time as a professor, being process driven rather than having an end goal. And to me, that spoke to listening to the other people in your class and sort of writing the conversation and helping guide it, but not having too strict of an outcome that you're trying to teach to.
Right.
Yeah. A quick reminder to our listeners that this is My Better Half on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Vanessa Finney in conversation with Lynn Slater, who spent a good chunk of her 60s as a model and social media influencer. So as a result of keeping your eyes open and some of the inventive steps you took, you were swept in. It wasn't an overnight success. It took you some years to build a really large following in this new career. And in fact, you make the point somewhere, why should we fear aging when, you know, I, for one, have had this remarkable new chapter, unexpected chapter in my 60s. So that makes a good
right.
point for not fearing the inevitable. But what surprised you most about this new invention, new adventure?
Well, I think, you know, the fact that it happened at all was
yeah.
the biggest surprise.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, to me, I'm just this little old gray-haired, wrinkled-faced social work professor. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm in London and I see my face go by on a bus. And, you know, started to see my face all over wherever I went. And even when I started to travel all over the world, there would be people who would come up and say, oh, you're the accidental icon. I follow you. I mean, that spectacularly surprised me.
Yeah, that's quite a development.
And to this day, I'm still not 100% certain, I mean, how it happened.
Well, I was going to ask, is there anything you'd go back and tell yourself at the start of that process, something you know now?
Well, I think the biggest thing that I learned from it is to not be so arrogant and think that you are going to be in control once you put yourself out onto a public space.
Mm.
I have not been a fashion influencer for almost 3 years now.
Okay.
After I sort of had my awakening the way that the media was now talking about senior influencers, et cetera, very oppositional. And I was like, I'm quitting. I'm not playing. I'm not going in your box. You're not putting me in a nursing home. And that's how you're making me feel.
You took your story back.
I did. And we moved outside of the city and we moved here. And so most of what I show these days, of course, right now, a lot of it is about the book. But most of what I show is just sort of my ordinary life here in Peekskill. You know, pictures of my garden, my sort of neighborhood. I'm wearing in most of my photos a pair of denim overalls or jeans, or, you know, I'm not dressing up. I don't have a reason to dress up as much as when I lived in New York City. And I've always dressed from a place of my identity, my role, what's happening culturally around me, the geography of where I'm living. And so I think the photos that I'm showing now are much more representative of what I call a realistic older life and not this aspirational one that is now being even more so held up for women to aspire to, where you are kind of ageless and perfectly fit and you're very hot and you're highly resourced and you're running marathons at, you know, 90 and you don't need a thing. You are completely independent. And, you know, that, of course, is in opposition to the other way aging is portrayed, which is, you know, you're going to have dementia, you're going to be disabled, you're going to need care, you're going to be dependent, you're draining society, you're ruining it for all the generations behind you. And the vast majority of people aging are at neither of those two opposite poles.
Right. Well, I'm glad you've reined this new chapter in to be one that's more inclusive of all different ages and all different stations in life. It's been wonderful talking with you. Thank you for spending some time with us today, Lynn.
And thank you so much for having me.
I've been talking with writer Lynn Slater. Her new book is available now, How to Be Old, Lessons in Living Boldly from the Accidental Icon. You can follow her and her new life on the Hudson River on Instagram. She's at Icon Accidental, and subscribe to her blog at lynnslater.substack.com. That's Lynn with one N. Thanks for listening to My Better Half. I'm Vanessa Finney. You can hear more episodes at ijpr.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.